And we are back with another editions of the dot. Edition of the dots. continuing our daily breakdown of what's going on in this crazy market and economy. I'm flying solo today. The brain trust is slacking off again. He couldn't be. I can't remember why, but I'm sure there's a good reason. But anyway, I don't really have a lot of comments on today. Pretty odd to see rates up again, dollar up over 105. The Dow finishes slightly negative. We don't talk about the Dow because it doesn't matter, but it's just odd to see it finish slightly negative. S&P up 80 bips. Let's see, where was that at? 74 bips, gave back some off the highs. Dow down slightly, S&P up 74 basis points, NASDAQ up 1.7% out of nowhere. I don't think there's a lot to take out. Oh, rates were up, dollar up. And now apparently tech stocks love higher rates and hot CPI prints. I don't really think you can take a lot out of it, though. You had a lot of options action today. Was today options expiry? Anyway, you had dealers in negative gamma, which means they needed to buy stocks. I think that drove it. You know, and then just the Meg 7. It was all the Meg 7s today. I mean, if you look at the stock market, I think the Dow kind of tells the story. Even weight S&P, I think, was up like, I don't know, somewhere around quarter of a percent, 25 bips, 30 bips, right in that ballpark. It's just a Meg 7 today. Today was a recreation in a lot of ways of all of last year. So now the difference is, and I actually take a lot from this. Here is what is interesting. In the past, we saw so many of these Meg 7 up days sucking all of the oxygen out of the room. Nothing else rallies. Okay, so the dollar was flat, slightly up. It was up most of the day, pulled back to about even on the day. Gold up 1.75%, up another 41 bucks, pushing 2390. Gold miners continue to lag. I know all the stories. Good friend of mine, Brent Johnson, is making points about why gold miners aren't a good bet. Guys, I love Brent. Think he's a super smart guy. I actually need to get him back on the show. But I just couldn't disagree with him more. I've heard that every bloody time gold runs, and we've always crushed owning miners. I think you can always come up with reasons why things aren't going to work this time and all that kind of. Now, what I will say is if you had me buying and holding gold mining companies over the long run, and maybe that's what Brent was talking about. I got to get him on to have this conversation. For the long run, though, I would be very careful about which ones I picked, right? Because, I mean, you guys know our thoughts on it. I think gold, silver, palladium, copper, I think they're all starting to forecast and show that inflation's going to be here for a lot longer. And I don't care what the Fed has to say or anybody has. I just think it's really hard to look at the data that we're currently looking at and come up with anything, you know, sensible that points in a different direction. I think gold and silver are screaming that right now. And that's what's interesting is you now again, it has to continue, right? But you just continue to see all the signs. I also love the fact that everybody is still talking crypto and tech. Like I said, I think you've got zero retail exposure into this. They're still chasing the same old names. I like the setup here. That being said, the one thing that I – again today, two Fed officials out offering – the headline is offering reassurance on cuts. Look, guys, if you're short or bearish here, and I think based on liquidity issues and taxes and people raising money to pay taxes, remember, we've got to think about this market differently, right? Valuation isn't driving anything. Fundamentals aren't driving anything. People are like, what do you mean? What I mean is, sure, do fundamentals play a role in these stocks movements? Yeah, but I mean, look at Apple. Apple today was up $110 billion in market cap. Why? Because they're going to put their M4 chips into Macs, and that supposedly is going to make them more AI compatible. It's just so dumb, right? I mean, it's just gotten so dumb. And what I think is hilarious is Apple makes that announcement just like Tesla, right as they're sitting on a really technical breaking point. Now, to be fair, full disclosure, we were short Apple. We've actually made some money on it. We're still sitting on a profit, but we're really close to our bail line here. That is not advice to be short Apple, not a recommendation for anybody else. But I just want to be transparent, right? I do have a dog in that fight. I just think it's hilarious how you can just still sit, just mention the word AI, and you tack on $110 billion of market cap on a company that's still trading, that's already trading at 27 times earnings, and the CEO themselves has basically come out and said, we're an ex-growth company. The Tesla one was hilarious too. Tesla right on the edge of a serious breakdown. Bad news. What was it? Last Friday. What was it? Bad news comes out. Stock's getting hammered. And boom, Musk comes out talking robo-taxis again. At some point, you would think that – I mean, it is getting so transparent right now. At some point, wouldn't regulators step in? Like I said, I mean, you know, I'm not alleging widespread. But I mean, it's stock manipulation. And I'm not saying it's criminal. I would just think the SEC – I mean, come on. Well, how is it that every single time these things are bouncing off resistance? And we're not short a basket of these things. You guys know my thoughts. I think things are going higher. I don't really know when, right? I don't want this to come around as like sour grapes or me crying in my beer. You know what I mean? But at what point do you step back and go, hey, guys, come on. You need to knock this off. This is getting very obvious. But hey, look, the other side of it too is, you know, as frustrating as these kind of thing, and I don't know why I get frustrated about it. Just nonsense, I guess, frustrates me. But like I said, on the flip side, I think that for people that have our outlook, again, I'm biased. It's my outlook. But, you know, I don't think the PPI information you got today really changes anything. You know, and truthfully, I don't really think that had a lot to do with the market. I think you could have seen the market get hammered if the PPI would have come in a lot hotter, but a little cooler than expected, but still up year over year, up about 2.1%, I want to say like that. So it has calmed down a little bit. A little surprising there. Again, not bad. I would be interesting to see Chase's breakdown just because I know that he's read all the way through it already, probably. And if he hasn't, I'm sure he's been in the process of doing it now. But I'd be interesting to see that because of the bounce back that we're seeing in manufacturing here. And remember, when I say bounce back, guys, I'm not saying that everything's ripping. I'm saying, and for those of you that don't, I think this is maybe you guys all get this, but this was a really important thing for me to wrap my head around. You know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, somewhere in that ballpark. Because regardless, like in the Great Depression, manufacturing bottomed, right? There were moments in the Great Depression, if you went back, I'm sure you had, remember on PMIs and PPI readings, it's all based on 50, right? If you get a, pardon me for the hiccup there, you get a reading over 50, it means you're expanding. Get a reading below 40, you're contracting. Well, you could have an abysmal reading that would be like akin to what you would see in a nasty recession, like let's say a 33 or a 32. And the very next month, if it improves just marginally, you're back above 50, right? So you have to really keep these things in context. You could have a month where you're 58, 60, everybody's like, oh, look at it raging back. And you go, guys, it's like a 1% recovery of a 30% loss, right? You've got to put, it's kind of like inflation. You got to put the number into context. And by definition, right, like I was saying, even in a depression, by definition, you will see bounces in those metrics because nothing goes down in a straight line. And then you'll watch the media. Oh, the PPI came in at 54. Last month it was 33. Boy, things are really turning around. No, that's a moderate improvement, right? So, but what was interesting to me is that looking at manufacturing coming, I would have expected PPI to be a little bit hotter. Again, I'm the portfolio manager of our non-constrained fund. But, you know, I would put Chase Wright up there as a co-portfolio manager because, you know, I'm approving all of the macro directions and all that kind of stuff and the composition of the fund. But, you know, Chase is the one that's keeping us abreast of, you know, all the details. So I really want to talk with him. He and I won't have a chance to do that probably until Monday because he's out again tomorrow. But anyway, we'll get him on. We'll get him a breakdown. But I was a little bit curious about I would have thought that PPI would have come in a little bit hotter. Regardless, though, I don't really think that what we saw today had a whole lot to do with that. And the thing I would point to is that rates are up again today. Not a lot. 10 years pressing 4.6. We're at 4.57% on the 10-year. Today feels a lot like options. It feels like dealers in negative gamma, which is certainly the case today. That's really what it felt like. And for confirmation on that, I'd look at the dollar and the 10-year yield. The bottom line is, my feeling all along has been like before we, and this is total speculation on my part, guys, but just being around these things, I will be surprised if the 10-year does not hit 5 before the Fed cuts. I don't know if, it's got time. Yeah. I mean, it just seems like you need to hit it at least one more time and test that 5% range. But I would be very shocked if anything good happens to stocks between where you're at right now on the 10-year yield at 4.5 and if I'm right and you get up to 5%, I would be surprised if anything really good happens to stocks there. But like I was saying, flipping back, and I'm looking at this article again. Fed officials offer reassurance on cuts. I'm just getting to the point. Well, we talked about it yesterday. I think you're down to two possible things to glean from the Fed right now, which is A, they're trying to be accommodative as they can possibly be in an election year. I think obviously that points to who they're in favor of, but I don't think we need to make that, I think it helps to keep politics out of the conversation just for the sake of clarity for all those involved. So I think it points to that. Maybe it's a combination of these two things, but the other thing I think it points to is the possibility that they realize that there is no return to 2% inflation, that they're trapped, that they don't really have room to hike much. It doesn't mean they might not try, but I mean, you can just see what's happened. And another thing that we're going to look into is I want to quit looking at just yields, and I want to look at the markets and economic data as it relates to the 30-year mortgage. And not that it's all hanging on mortgages, right? But I think that's the real issue. I think that, you know, every time I feel like you see mortgages dip below 7, you kind of see things coming back around, see things heating up a little bit. And then today you're back above 7 on the 30-year mortgage. And like I said, I just have a really hard time seeing anything improve much between here and, 4.5% on the 10-year, up to 5% on the 10-year. But a really good article came out today. I was reading about Bill Smead, guy runs Smead Investment, longtime mutual fund manager with a good track record. He's a local Seattle guy. He's actually friends. He went to college with one of my good clients, also a friend of mine. I just think he's a sharp guy. I think he does a good job. He's put up good performance numbers. He was interviewed today, and I tacitly agree with him. Certainly, in a historical standpoint, I agree with his take. I'm not sure if this time is going to work out the same based on where our government is and based on the fact that nobody seems to be. It still amazes me how little, how little voice or how little concern or how little talk is dedicated to deficits and debt. I mean, it doesn't surprise me because it's one of those things. What are politicians not going to talk about? They're not going to talk about whatever doesn't help them get elected. So that part of it makes sense. But he was just saying, and this is a point we've made several times. If you look at based on a valuation basis and then a comp of the 10-year yield, it has served historically as a very good indicator of forward returns. So the higher the yield is on the 10-year and the higher the multiple is in the stock market tends to point to worse outcomes over the next 10 years for the stock market. And basically, I don't think there's any economic magic to it, guys. I think what it points to is just overvaluation, right? And when you look at that metric right now, it is at the second lowest point at any time, I think, in the last 50 to 60 years. It may be all time. But that forward expected return number over the next 10 years is like negative 3%. When you got to the height of the tech bubble, that number got to like negative 7.5%. And that is meaning that if history plays out based on these valuation ranges, and it's really simple or it's not really simple, but the easiest way to think about this is the higher valuations go, the more forward growth you're building into that valuation, right? So it doesn't mean necessarily these companies are going to crater. What it means is you have a lot of forward growth priced into these things. Now, if inflation is ever present and continues to heat up and makes a resurgence, that could throw those forecasts out the window. Because like I said, I think you're in a tricky place where if inflation continues to ramp higher, and it is definitely moving in the wrong direction, despite what all the Fed officials say. I think you'd get in a really tricky situation because I think a lot of the data, a lot of the evidence points to the fact that the Fed is sort of capped at 5.5-6. Now, maybe something changes that pushes that cap up. But the other problem you got to remember is it's not just about containing inflation either. Right? For every point they push up, when you're running deficits like this, they are drastically increasing interest expense, right? Which is going to push the deficit out even more, blow it out even more. So they're in a tricky spot, man. I really don't know what they're going to do here. Another one I've noticed today, and it's been pretty expensive, Costco. Costco's trading at nearly 50 times earnings. And the reason that breaks my heart is because I want to own it. I love the company. I love Costco. I just can't. You know, I'm the guy, I'm the schmuck that sold it when it got up to 40 times earnings. So I can continue to be wrong there. I love the company. These valuations are just ridiculous. At least in my perspective, and it's hard to say that because, you know, you want some of these companies, you want to pick them up. But another one that looks interesting, those pulled back quite a bit, Nike, still not cheap. But anyway, let's see what else. Bitcoin was up a little bit on the day. Where did we finish on Bitcoin? Up 1% or 70 basis points, right around 70,600. Still crazy to say that too. Gold miners had a nice day, up 2.27, but again, still drastically underperforming gold. Gosh, that trade looks good to me. Uranium looks like it might be teasing with another breakout. That continues to be solid. I think, again, if you're looking at rates, looking at the dollar, today's a bit – another one you got to watch, U.S. dollar, Japanese. The yen now is at the lowest point to the U.S. dollar it has been since, I believe, 1990. So many historic marks going on right now. It really is wild. And at this moment right now, Bitcoin is up $666. Little satanic inference there, up 0.95%. It jumped a little bit since I just told you guys that. But yeah, that's about it. Not a whole lot of other information coming out tomorrow. That's it. Still working on the interview. I have last week threw us into chaos, trying to rearrange things, hoping to have somebody for you tomorrow. But regardless, we're doing the show, so you won't want to miss that. So we will be back again tomorrow. Thank you for continuing to take this journey with us. Until tomorrow, we'll see you then. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.